Evan Sayet has made a long journey. He went from being a non-believing Jew writing and producing comedy in Hollywood to becoming an outspoken believing Jew. Now he speaks and writes against leftism, wokeism, and the correlation to what we're talking about today, which is militant atheism. He's here to talk about his transformation and why atheism is so destructive. Stay with us. Welcome to the Moms for America podcast. Each week, special guests tackle the issues facing the moms of America today. Discussions include personal stories and advice on how moms can build a strong foundation of faith, family, and freedom in their homes and country. Hi, I'm Debbie Karlaitis, your host, and welcome. We're so glad that you're here, moms. We appreciate you stopping by every week. We've got another interesting show for sure. Right here at the top of the show, I do want to invite all of our moms to like, subscribe, and share the podcast. Please do that. Also, if you're the first time joining us here at Moms for America podcast, welcome. We want to invite you to be a part of our movement, a part of our family. We are moms uniting all across the country. We're fighting for faith, family, freedom, and the Constitution. So please check us out at momsforamerica.us. We're a powerful movement of mamas just like you that love our kids and love our country. Also, if you have an idea for the podcast or any feedback, would you please email me at podcast@momsforamerica.net? I would love to hear from you. All right, moms, on to today's program. Well, my guest today spent the first part of his life as a liberal Jew who didn't think much about God or religion and dismissed conservatives as being the bad guys. Now he jokes, this is his joke, the first time you think is the last time you're Democrat. All right, he'll talk about that one. Evan Sayet has a long resume that includes work in comedy, politics, and public speaking. Today, we're talking about his latest project, which is a book about what he says is the extravagantly failed atheist origin myth. I'll let him tell you about the title, which is a doozy, and explain it too. Well, this is going to be so interesting. Thank you, Evan, for joining us on the Moms for America podcast. Welcome.
Well, thanks, Deb. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Well, somehow along the way, Kimberly heard about your book, shared some information and said, this is going to be a really interesting topic for our moms. So I'm excited to kind of get into this. We're talking about the theories behind the origin of the universe. I mean, this is some pretty deep stuff, right? But the title of your book, you have to say the title of your book and then explain it because it's not very self-explanatory. It threw me for a loop at first.
Okay, well, it's kind of long and I hope I can remember it. It's Magic Soup, Typing Monkeys and Horny Aliens from Outer Space, the patently absurd, wholly unsubstantiated, and extravagantly failed atheist origin myth. And basically, wow. Basically, what I noticed, because I was an atheist, I was also on the political left, but none of my beliefs, whether it was about God or whether it was about political issues, was actually a thoughtful, it wasn't that I had studied it and considered both sides and came out on the left or came out on the side of atheism. It was basically what my friend Andrew Breitbart would have called the default factory setting for somebody born into my demographics. I was a New York City born liberal Jew who spent his entire adult life in the entertainment industry, first as a stand-up comedian and then as a television writer. And so I never really gave a lot of thought either to my politics or to belief in God. I knew what people on the political left know about politics. I knew that Democrats are good and Republicans are evil. I know that I'm good, so I must be a Democrat, you know, and
pretty easy, huh?
Yeah, it was all very, very easy, so long as you never had to think.
Right, exactly.
I have an expression, the first time you think is the last time you're a Democrat.
That is hysterical.
All right, and so what I began to notice along the way, And I guess I'll go back to my origin story as far as my conversion to the political right. was even as a brain dead liberal, 9/11 didn't surprise me, right? Mm. Obviously, I didn't know the dates, I didn't know the targets, I didn't the amount of carnage sickened me, But even as a brain dead liberal, I knew just enough about the world to know that the same people who were murdering the Jews of Israel for no other reason than that they were the closest infidels, who were murdering Hindus in India for no other reason that they were the closest infidels, who had just recently then murdered children in Beslan, Russia, because they were the closest infidels, would, when they could figure a way across those giant oceans, come and get the big infidel, the great Satan. Of course they would. So right. It didn't surprise me that we would have terrorist attacks, Islamic terrorist attacks. What surprised me was my friends and my colleagues and the people on the political left and their response to the attacks. The idea that we deserve them, that it was, in the words of Jeremiah Wright, President Obama's spiritual mentor, the chickens coming home to roost. And that the way to prevent further attacks was to be nicer to the terrorists. Mm. Well, this was insane to me. And so I had to begin to think, how do good, smart people, I mean, my colleagues, my neighbors, my friends, my family members are good, smart people. Right. And yet here they were siding with evil over good, wrong over right, once again.
And I've seen this with Hamas.
You see what's
just recently.
Now.
Yes.
The only reason it's more obvious and in greater number is because the political movement that I had recognized back in 2007 when I gave my original talk to the Heritage Foundation has metastasized, because over the years between 2007 when I first started to write about it and today, there's been the last of the great generations have retired. More and the woke generations have more and more become the powers that be.
Mm-hmm. True. So I do think that is really funny. The first time that you think is the last time that you're Democrat. And I think that's even people that used to be considered liberal Democrats, I think the process is very much like you said, they weren't thinking about it. Something hit them. Something made them start thinking. And then when they do, they actually kind of saw the world from a different perspective.
Well, I know what it was for a cousin of mine who was also just very smart, very, when I say smart, clever, you know, able, articulate, all these things, because also always wrong, politically on the wrong side of everything. Because when you're a Democrat, you are literally always on the side of ugly over beautiful, profane over profound, failure over success. I mean, you know, you look on the streets and they let the criminals out of jail and they persecute and prosecute the cops. You know, they are 180 degrees from right on every single issue. Right. And there's a reason for this, which is actually part of my original book, The Kindergarten of Eden, How the Modern Liberal Thinks. And that's based on that original lecture I gave to the Heritage Foundation, which I wanted you guys to watch. And when I gave that talk, and Andrew Breitbart called that talk, and I didn't know Andrew at this point. Mm. Andrew called that talk one of the five most important conservative speeches ever given.
Wow, congratulations.
And I started to get emails as soon as it came out. I started, and people were using this phrase, this odd phrase, you know, a handful of them, but it's such an odd phrase that even more than one, they said, you know what you have there? You have the unified field theory of leftism. Because once you understand what I explained in that talk, you understand why good people side with evil at every turn. And so when I wrote the book, The Kindergarten of Eden, How the Modern Liberal Thinks, based on that talk, I laid it out with four laws and three corollaries as if it was a scientific theory. And if I can, I can explain it to you all in just the first two laws.
Okay, go ahead.
I'm going to give it to you as it's written in the book and then explain. So the first law of my unified field theory of leftism, today's leftism, wokeism, is that the woke were raised to believe that indiscriminateness is a moral imperative, because its opposite is discrimination. In the 1980s, thinking was basically outlawed. And the reason it was the 1980s is because that's when the first babies born after World War II, who became the children of the 60s, they started to become the powers that be in the 1980s and 90s. Right? Mm-hmm. And so the idea behind the outlawing of thinking is that anything you believe, Deb, anything that I believe, anything that anybody believes, is going to have been so tainted by your personal prejudices, prejudices we all have, we can't help but have, based on the color of your skin, the nation of your ancestry, your height, your weight, your sex, and so on. Anything that you believe is going to be so tainted by your personal prejudices that the only way not to be a bigot is to never think at all.
Ah, there
right, but
you
now
go.
That's the first law. But if that were the only law, then you'd expect the Democrat to sometimes be right, sometimes be wrong, and most of the time be somewhere in the middle. But
Okay.
they're not. They're always as wrong can be, the very opposite of all that's good, right, beautiful, true, and just. And that's because the second law of the unified field theory of leftism, which is that indiscriminateness of thought does not lead to indiscriminateness of belief. Indiscriminate thought leads invariably to siding with evil over good, wrong over right, ugly over beautiful, profane over profound. Why? Because if nothing is better than anything else, if no culture, no religion, no form of governance, no familial construct, if nothing is better than anything else, then success is unjust. Why should a person, a country, a religion, why should something succeed if it's not better than anything else?
Okay.
Conversely, failure, as proved by nothing other than the fact that it has failed, serves as proof positive that somehow the failure had been victimized. Right? Meanwhile, by extension, and I'm almost done here.
Wow. Okay. This is deep.
I am deep, except
you're deep and funny at the same time. This
well,
is
not at
this
the
is
same time,
something else.
alternately.
Alternately. Okay. We'll go with that one.
Right. That wasn't so funny. But if success and failure is proof of injustice, then great success and great failure is proof positive of great injustice, and exceptional success and failure is proof of the greatest injustices of all. This is why all the nations on this planet, which two do they hate the most? America and Israel. And it's not because there's any argument to be made that we are the worst nations in the history of the world. It's because we are the most successful nations in the history of the world. And success to anybody on the political left is proof of not only injustice, but the more sustained and the greater the success, where you and I would say, hey, let's emulate the things that make them successful. They can't recognize that something is better than something else. And that goes all the way again to now my new book, which is about God, because it's exactly why they cannot and do not believe in God. Because if there is a God, then things are better than other things. There are better behaviors. And this woke movement is based on the promise that if you eliminate the recognition of good and evil and everything in between, right and wrong, better and worse, if you eliminate all those things, then you will eliminate anything for us to fight about, and we will live in a peaceful paradise, because there'll be, quote from John Lennon, nothing left to kill, nothing left to kill or die for.
Right. Which we know is just such an, it makes absolutely no sense, but I know that people somehow adopt these philosophies, and I know that's what you're talking
but
about.
That is, Deb, I'm sorry, I get so excited about
go
this.
Ahead, go ahead.
All right, but all John Lennon did in that song was put the atheist doctrine to music. That is the atheist doctrine.
Heard always about that song, right? Imagine.
And what they don't tell you is, okay, by eliminating the recognition of the better, eliminating the seeking of, yes, you may create a world with nothing to kill or die for. You also create a world with nothing to live for and no reason not to kill.
Yeah.
And so what we see is that during this militant atheist era that we're in now, now that the woke have taken over the institutions and used them to brainwash successive generations into not recognizing good and bad, whether it's health, like being obese is just as good as being in shape, or what we find is that we have an epidemic of suicide.
Sure.
Because there is nothing to live for.
Of course.
Have an epidemic of random multiple killings, people going to schools and shooting them up. Killing stress, this has never happened before.
Right. Well, because we always, if there is no purpose, if there is no plan, if you were not created and spoken into existence by something, we would say, of course, God, in the beginning, then you really kind of live this empty life without direction, without purpose. The biggest thing that I've drilled into my kids is you were made by God for a purpose. He designed you. And to me, there's such great comfort in that. And I know that's where your book goes. Because, right, if there's no purpose, if there's no plan, right, it's a selfless, empty society. But I kind of want to get to your thoughts. When you were an atheist and a liberal, you said you were, but you weren't committed. You weren't a diehard on this, right? You just adopted it.
Yeah, I mean, I did what the vast majority of atheists do, which, as I said, God is extra, is beyond scientific. It's not scientific. I believe in science, so okay. Therefore I cannot believe in God. But what the atheists don't tell you, and this is something you see not just with God, it's all the way across the board on every issue, that people on the political left cannot argue in the affirmative for what it is they believe. They can only tell you what's wrong with your beliefs, but then once they've told you that you're a bigot, you're a racist, you're a homophobe, you're a xenophobe, you're a moron, you're an idiot, okay, I cop to all those things. Now tell me, what is it that you believe?
Interesting, yes.
And so they tell the children that God is not scientific, but what they don't tell the children is that the only alternative to God is equally not scientific. Our existence cannot be explained by our science. By definition, if the universe had a beginning, then there had to be something outside of our science to have created it. If the universe was just always here, which is even a cop-out on its own, but if it was always here, then it's outside the dimension of time. Mm. So they do not have a theory that is any more scientific than God. In fact, as I go through in my book, step by step, whether it's the advent of the universe, the fine-tuning of the cosmos, the writing of the DNA, given they're both going to be outside of the realm of our science, what we do know in every single case and at every step along the way sides with an intelligent and loving creator, a monotheistic God. Yeah. And so if you really want to be, because they will say, you'll say to them, well, what do you believe in? They say, I believe in science. But then you say to them, okay, what science?
Well, then what? Right.
Yeah, what science do you believe in? And they have literally, I don't mean just the ill-informed. I mean, the leading atheistic scientists, the people I call the militant atheists, like Richard Dawkins, Sam Harris.
I've seen some of these debates where they get, you know, they get pigeonholed and then they just said, well, it's as much as faith that I have to believe it is as much as faith is that you have to believe it. And that's throughout.
Fine. You know what? If that's one thing I'm really trying to do with this book, the new one, is simply put God back in play, because there's a computer scientist named David DeLertner who was commenting on his students. He teaches at Yale. And he said, they're not atheists. They don't rise to the level of atheists. They've never given God's existence any thought. And all I'm attempting to do in this book is get them to think, because I truly believe the first time you think is the last time you're an atheist.
This is what I want to ask you. Do you think that atheism is on the rise? Do you think it is strong? Do you think it is growing? I don't know. I'm not even in that community because I believe in Jesus, and in the beginning in Genesis is in the beginning with me. And that's always, I've always believed that he created the heavens and the earth and us.
There is no doubt that atheism that is growing with each successive modern generation, because the woke and personal atheism as a personal belief has always existed, but militant atheism, and that is an organized attempt to inflict non-belief across a society, is fairly new in the modern world. Right, it only first began to get intellectual credence when Marx published the Communist Manifesto. Right, that's only 150 years ago out of 5,000 years of a monotheistic God. Right, last 150 years, they only got their first government 100 years ago with the Russian Revolution. Right, in just the 100 years, militant atheist movements have been Leninism, Stalinism, Hitlerism, Maoism, and now wokeism. They all made the same problems. Right? Militant atheism is not a belief. Atheism is not a belief. Mm. Right? But militant atheism is a weapon that is wielded by demagogues so that they can clear the moral path to their rise to power.
So, like a movement.
like a move. It's part of a movement. So it was part of Leninism. It was part of Stalinism. It was part of Hitlerism. It was part of Maoism. It's part of wokeism. And they all make the same promise that if you reject God and embrace us as gods, we will engineer a brand new type of never before seen human being, and then paradise will ensue. And so the communists, the Maoists, the Leninists, the Stalinists, they promised that they would engineer a human being wholly devoid of selfishness. This new kind of human being that they were going to engineer would toil to the best of his abilities while asking almost nothing for himself. And once that, once they enforced that, there would be a workers' paradise. The Nazis were going to create, if you trusted the Nazis and did what the Führer said, he was going to create the perfect world and the perfect human being who was so efficient because he was devoid of the confusing human traits like sympathy and empathy in him. Well, the woke promise that if you reject God and you embrace them as the gods, they will create the human being who is wholly devoid of hate. There will be no hate in this world. The problem is that love and hate is a single concept. And when they eliminated hate, they eliminated love. But you can't love justice unless you hate injustice. You can't love beauty unless you hate ugliness.
Great examples.
You can't hate truth unless you hate lies. Well, the people they brought up, the opposite of love, and the opposite isn't hate. The opposite of love is indifference. And they have raised successive generations that are indifferent to beauty. They are indifferent to love. I mean, you look at what we used to call love was romantic love, was courtship and chivalry and commitment. Those things are gone. And now instead they've replaced it with loveless pornography, loveless Tinder dating, loveless benefits from mere friends.
Can I trade this one too? Self-love.
Self-love, that's a lot in my previous two books about yet another epidemic is the mental illness of narcissism. And the real story of narcissists, the real moral that you're supposed to take from Narcissus is not just that he loved himself, but because he loved himself so much, he kept looking at himself, he was indifferent to the world around him. He couldn't hear Echo's pain. The person who loved him, the being that loved him, he could. The real story of narcissism and the mental illness of narcissism is not just that you love yourself a lot, it's that you don't care about anything else around you.
Right. You take over. You become the all. You know, I think about even some of the songs and the different messages that our kids are growing up on. You don't need anybody. You don't need a husband. You don't need children. You don't need anything. You just need yourself. And you're on a lonely island.
Deb, it's even worse than that. You're exactly right. But when Taylor Swift started writing songs, when she first came on the scene and she wrote these songs about love and wanting a boyfriend and caring, she was reviled as a misogynist. She was a internalized misogynist, because the idea to think that you aren't perfect as you are, that you can be better with a partner, with a friend, with a teammate, simply the fact that she sought love was considered internalized misogyny. That's what the academics call it.
What a crazy world, you know, as moms raising kids in this generation. And I know you know, your family, all the moms that are listening, you know, in the roll off of atheism and the role of a godless society and the role of not having a purpose and plan, really, we could see so many of these sad situations, and it's only getting worse. So I appreciate you trying to bring this up and have people think. If you really say there is no God, if you really say you don't believe, what do you believe in? What drives you every day? I guess nothing. What drives you every day?
Right. It is literally
what's
nothing.
Hope?
You know what drives you is destroying what is. Right? Because what is has failed. What is has caused war and misogyny and homophobia and xenophobia, if you believed in. And so they are filled. A line that I use repeatedly in my new book is that the woke reside in a universe that exists only between hatred and indifference. They hate everybody and everything that cares, and the only thing that they love is indifference. Indifference to they don't think about what follows. So I give as an example, they don't love the immigrants. They don't want open borders because they love the immigrants. They don't know the immigrants, so how could they possibly love them? The reason they support open borders is because they're indifferent to the victims of the illegal aliens that they let into the country. They're not pro-abortion because they love women. They don't know the woman. So how they are pro-abortion because they are indifferent to the suffering of the child. They aren't pro-transgender because they love transgender. It's because they're indifferent to the horrors of genital mutilation, and they are indifferent to, because the given, the end, no matter, you don't have to know any of the facts. And they don't know any of the facts, and that's what's so telling. They, mm-hmm. even before they support transgenderism, they haven't looked into what the surgery does. It's horrific. What these puberty blocking drugs do, it's horrific. Right. But they don't, because the answer's preordained. Nothing is better than anything else. So if they take transgender drug, if they take puberty blocking drugs and destroy it, well, that's not worse than the answer to everything is nothing. And yeah. that starts with not believing in God.
Right. And like you said, indifferent is so dangerous because everything is acceptable there's no right or wrong. Like you said, there's nowhere to go if you're indifferent, and then all things play into it. Then you don't even know what you agree. You have no convictions, right?
You have no convictions. And what ends up happening is that these gods, whether the God is Lenin, whether, you know, the government, sure. the state, or whether sure. the God is the Fuhrer, or whether, well, in this time, they called the science, but there's no such thing as the science. They're talking about a handful of elites who have, instead of calling themselves Big Brother, they call themselves the science, and they don't care enough to even look into. It's so self-evident that if you feed a child untested puberty blocking drugs, we don't even know what the long-term
right.
effects are.
Ooh,
but they're not
have any idea
be-
right.
But they don't care.
They don't care.
They don't, because whatever it is just as good as anything and everything else.
Is it? So when you would say the militant atheism, what is their end goal then?
Now, the end goal is to destroy everything that is and recreate, bring us all the way back to the beginning of human existence, and then recreate humanity in their image with them being seen as gods. And if you think this is fucked, the WEF, the World Economic Forum, they have said point blank their goal is to the Great Reset.
Right.
They're going to reset humanity, and then they are going to
decide. They decide. How is this being received when you get a chance to talk to people about this, uh-huh. your book? Are people waking up? Are they kind of seeing this? Is this kind of I know you do it with some comedy, because atheism, you kind of go through a lot of the craziness about it.
This book has a lot of ridicule. My earlier books, I wanted people to get it step by step, the unified theory of this book, because you can't help but ridicule. You know, one of the problems is there are a number of books out there over the years, obviously over 5,000 years, that try to make the case for a creator, including Lee Strobel's The Case for
right.
a Creator.
Case for Christ, yeah.
Yeah, and The Case for Christ, and yeah. he has a series of them, Case for Messiah. The reason I find those books, and believe me, I think they're hugely important. I think Lee did a great job, but I don't think we need to litigate God's existence any more than you need to litigate whether the emperor is wearing clothes. Mm-hmm. I don't think you need to say, well, there'd be, I don't know, 1,000 thread count, or to get into the technicality. No, the emperor is not wearing clothes. And that's what my book does repeatedly, is it goes through each of the big questions. And as I said earlier, we know that I'm an idiot. I'm for believing God. But tell me, what do you believe? And I put in what is the latest scientific theories about the origin of the universe. And there's nothing. There's nothing. They don't even have the very first clue. The only argument they have is that you're stupid. It's all about how bad you are. And there is not even, and there's a reason. It's not that they don't know the science, and it's not that they haven't yet discovered. It's that it's impossible for there to be. They have limited science, the definition of science, to materialism. Right? And they did that in order to eliminate God, because God is not material. But there's no alternative that can satisfy that restriction, because it's going, no matter what, if the universe came from nothing or came from, it had to come from materials that they don't count, from beyond our universe. So how's the reaction been?
Yeah.
Oh, that was the question.
That's okay. I'm just listening. I'm just kind of taking it all in here going, okay. Well, you know, and we know that if they can get rid of God, if they can get rid of the Bible, if they can get rid of faith, if they can get rid of, you know, religion, all these things that matter, they win. And we're not going to let them win. So I appreciate you sharing this.
I'm so sorry. This is a habit I have. I interrupt. But it's not just faith in, and it's not just, it's science that they eliminate. Yeah. And I start my book with a quotation from one of the leading militant atheists, where he admits that they are peddling patently absurd. This is where the subtitle comes from, that they are peddling patently absurd, wholly unsubstantiated, extravagantly failed theories, because they have nothing other than those to support their prior commitment to atheism, their political commitment to atheism. But what's amazing is, when you lose God, not only do you lose science, but you lose the science of everything. You lose the science of beauty. There is, and that's why there's no aesthetics any longer. You lose the science of jurisprudence. Equity is the opposite of justice. Right? The idea that everybody gets equally rewarded without the definition of justice, as all moral people would understand it, is the closest possible wedding of outcome to behavior. If you behave well, you should be rewarded. If you behave poorly, you should be punished, if only by the withholding of the reward. Equity is the exact opposite of that. It's that everybody gets equally rewarded, wholly without regard to behavior. And so you lose the science of jurisprudence, sure, you lose the science of aesthetics, you lose the science of athletics, you know, being morbidly obese versus being in shape. The Sports Illustrated, right? Their mission is to highlight physicality and being in shape. And they put a morbidly obese woman on the cover of their swimsuit edition. Why? To show that nothing can be said to be beautiful. Nothing can be said to be ugly. Nothing. This entire, and if God is what gave us everything, you would expect without God, there'd be nothing. Yeah. And there is, in fact, in wokeism, nothing.
Yeah. And you do see that, you see just trying to steal the identity and neutralize the beauty of sex, male and female, all of that neutralizing, all of that indifferent. As you speak that, you can see how that is becoming a part of the society. Everything is gray. There is no black and white. There's no beauty. There's no color. Right. Yeah. And there's no creation that God made. Right.
If you look at equity, diversity, equity, and inclusion. All three of them, as I said, equity is making nothing special, nothing more worthy of reward than anything else. Diversity is the exact opposite of what they say it is. It's actually the watering down of things until there's nothing special. And the example, I don't know, I don't think it made it into the book. It made it right to the very end. But let's say the Mexican government mandated that diversity was so important that every mariachi band had to have 5 whites, 2 blacks, and the more you add to that, it becomes less of a mariachi band. The more they diversify the band, the less it becomes this unique. And so diversity is not really an attempt to diversify. It's an attempt to so water things down that nothing has any meaning.
Wow. You have got so many incredible thoughts here. How do our moms get your book and some of your other writings? Where do we catch up with you here?
Yeah. all things Evan Say It can be found at Evan Say It, EVAN, S as in Sam, AYET.com. But go right now and buy the new book, the Magic Soup, The Typing Monkeys and Horny Aliens from Outer Space. And you can just go to Amazon, type in my name. My name's the easiest name, SAYET. And almost nobody else in the whole world has my name. So I will come up.
So your life, how has this changed since you left the hopeless atheism ideology or you know, belief system? And what do you say to our moms? Because we're battling a culture that is teaching that God does not exist, that to be indifferent, right? That's what this culture is being told. What do you want to tell our moms? How your life has changed your view on life and what you would tell our moms as we're dealing with this in our culture?
Well, years and years and years ago, it was already known, the purpose-driven life.
That's one of my favorite. Yes.
Okay. So simply to have a legitimate purpose, that's a higher purpose. And this is what kills me. Even if it were to turn out there is no God, do you really want to go through life having no purpose? Do you really want to go through life living between the parameters of hatred and indifference? Because that's all there is. There's hatred for us, the homophobe, the xenophobe, the racist, the bigot, but in its place, there's nothing in its stead. And what I encourage people who are the victims of the young, who are victims of the militant atheists, you don't even have to start out believing in God. Believe that the world is not indiscriminate. And go out and find why it is that people think the Sistine Chapel is beautiful and a pile of dung isn't. Because it's not because of white supremacy. It's because there are aesthetic values. Go out and see why it is that something survived for 5,000 years and other things fell by the wayside. Because once again, all we have to do is get them to start thinking. Yeah. You know why? Because first time you think, I was waiting for you.
Right. Oh, yeah, right. I should have finished that. Da-da-da-da-da. That's right. The first time you think, that life changes, right?
There's a program out there. I'm sorry, I know I must be running over, but there's a program out there that is recognized as the best, if not the only way to turn miserable people into happy, productive people. And it's called the 12-step program. And one of the very first things that they say to do is I came to believe in something bigger than myself. And that's the first thing that we have to get them. You don't have to get them to believe in God right away. Get them to believe in something bigger than themselves. And then once they do, because we expect to change people overnight. We expect to convert them overnight. We expect to, whether it's to become Republicans, or whether it's to become believers.
Right.
And instead, and I believe this is in the Bible somewhere, but plant the seed. And along the way, when you run into them, you'll water it. When somebody else runs into it, they'll water it. And it's a process.
It is. Well, I so appreciate you exposing, because atheism has become kind of like trendy, right? It's become, abandon God, do your own, all this selfness, all the things that you just talked about. And it's so empty. And it really is kind of like you're saying it. I don't want to say I guess it could be a cult. I mean, it is a movement. It is.
It's a cult.
Yeah. It's a lot of people have told me clearly that it's a cult, because it people pledge to it and they give their life to it and they adopt it and it runs through everything.
The thing about a cult is typically you've replaced God with a human being.
Right.
Right. There's some human being who you now will follow, whether it's Jim Jones and here you are following the government, or you are following the state, or you are following Der Fuhrer, or you're following Big Brother. Well, today they're following, quote unquote, the science. The problem is that there's no, except in totalitarian states, there is no such thing as the science.
Yeah. So militant atheism, thank you so much for exposing this and the movement and the devastation of it. I can't help but just think about the scriptures that say when Christ says, "For I have a plan and a purpose for you," you know, for hope and a future. I mean, without that, it is really a very bleak future. And there's nothing like knowing that we've been created divinely by a by a creator who loves us and knows us by name. So thank you, Evan. I appreciate it. Again, the moms can get this. Maybe they have somebody in their family that's claiming to be an atheist. Somebody
I wrote it for people who believe to give to their loved ones who don't believe. You don't write a book on a subject that's been written about for so many years unless you're doing it a different way. And I'm doing it a different way. and I believe it's in a way that will get through to the younger ones.
Right. I like that you've come in it with a different angle. So thank you so much, Evan. We'll have our moms get your book and some of your other writings and appreciate what you're doing and get that message out there.
I'm doing my best. Thank you for helping.
Thank you, Evan. Well, thanks, Evan. You surely did give us a lot to think about. Again, Evan's writings are very interesting resources and tools that you can give to someone that would be considered indifferent or claiming to be an atheist. I think this would be something for them to read. So pass it on. All right, moms, I also want to remind you to visit our website again, which is momsforamerica.us. Sign up for our newsletter, join the movement, let us help you in your journey through motherhood. Everything that affects you as a mom, we have something to help you and support you, inform you, educate you, all of that. A lot of the things that I haven't talked about today, we have a lot of information regarding those topics and those issues. So please check us out, momsforamerica.us. One of the things we always talk about along with our webinars, resources, brochures, pamphlets, topics, all of that, is we share our signature program, which is called the Cottage Meetings. It's 12 lessons that will inspire you about America's amazing heritage, the principles of liberty in your home, in your community. You want to talk about the foundation of America and its Christian heritage. You want to talk about that? Go ahead, check out our Cottage Meetings. That is a faith-filled, inspirational lessons that will help you seriously teach these principles to your kids. Again, faith, conviction, God, these are all principles that we need to be teaching in our home with our children. So this program, along with everything else on our website, are all great resources for you moms. So please check us out. All right, moms, please join us next week. We're going to have another informative discussion for moms just like you. Remember, please share, like our podcast. We do really appreciate that. Helps us so much. And moms, let's remember, we are changing our world one home at a time. Let's keep doing it. Thank you. God bless.